I'm Mike Linneman, one of the writers at Gathering Magic, and with me, Ant Goed.
And I'm Ant Tessitore. I'm also a writer at Gathering Magic, and I also do names and flavor text writing for Wizards.
So we decided that after some time of people pestering us for years, in my case, of having a Vorthos podcast, we're finally going to have one. And we're going to keep them short. They will be under 30 minutes every time, so you can go out on a run and get them did. But before we do that, we should probably give you a little background on who the hell we are. Ant, you can go first as your name starts alphabetically.
All right. I'm Ant. I'm a writer for both Gathering Magic and Wizards, but I'm also an analyst for a startup business analytics and marketing consulting firm. So that's my kind of day job where I make my money so that I can eat and have, you know, a roof over my head. But at night, I am a huge flavor nerd and I sit up and write my articles and I watch movies trying to come up with the best new word I could possibly find to put on a magic card.
I dig that. I know I relate to that. Ant and I are both Gathering Magic writers, which we are the flavorful site, among other things. A little background on me. I've been writing for Gathering Magic for a few years now. I was on flavor text teams like Ant here. I did a couple. Found out that I'm better with art than with writing, to be honest. I worked as an art director for a local gaming company, and I worked on some trading card games, which were pretty enjoyable. And I write weekly for Gathering Magic, and I travel quite a bit to any sort of art conventions going on. The reason why we're finally doing this year is there's finally a new crop of Vorthoses that are popping up, and that relates to today's episode, which we're talking about, the new Commander 2014 product. Giving you some background, there used to be Vorthos podcasts. They all cropped up right about the time of the Mending, which, if you know your storyline, is when all of the older planeswalkers were fixed and killed and made more mortal, such that you could make planeswalker cards, and it really had a separation of old and new, and this was during the Time Spiral block. Lots of Vorthos podcasts popped up, and there really hasn't been a good example of how to do this since. They usually had 2 to 3 hour episodes, which they really dove into flavor, which is great, but the problem is too niche for that long of a production. We've been trying to kick this around with Gathering Magic writers, but as we are in the age group in 20s and 30s, people have kids and come and go from the game, especially if you're writing. Then, Ant approached me.
Right. For a while. I was hunting you for a while to get this going.
It was. It was really a thing that we tried to marinate out what would be the best option. Should we have 3 people? Should we have guests? Should we have 4 people? How should we do go that through? And we're not going to ask the fans for feedback right away or people that would like to hear this because, one, most people don't comment. I understand that from heavy meta. And, two, we're still going to try that out. We're going to see who we can get on here. Do we travel to Renton and do one live? Do we find the old creative team from back in the day? Do we find old concept artists? We don't know yet, but we're going to look into every part of it.
When I approached Mike originally, it was more as a consumer. I wanted a Vorthos podcast, and I couldn't find one. Like, I wanted something where we could have interviews with the creative team. We could have interviews with other writers who like Vorthos content. We could talk about the names and the art and the little tidbits that are kind of, like, hidden in the new sets that, especially now that Uncharted Realms is focusing much more on the story, and they don't do as many articles into, like, hey, here's this obscure flavor reference that you might not have noticed. Like, that's kind of more just handled by the Arcana now.
And we looked at this as to say, okay, well, we can go canon or non-canon. Canon would be what's on the card, what's in the flavor text, what we can physically perceive, find, and find an archive of. Non-canon would be fictional universe and side stories and things. And while those are fantastic, they have a learning curve for people because not everyone sees them. So it's this unapproachability factor. For example, even altarists, while they are enhancing the flavor of the game, they aren't a canon piece. It's not something that they can officially recognize. So we will play with that gray area as much as we can. So today, 2 things we need to talk about. First, what does it mean to be a Vorthos? And the second thing, we're going to go in and talk about Commander 2014 a little bit. First of all, we need to see what has changed about being a Vorthos from then till now. It used to be you are the storyline person looking for all the flavor text gems that if you put them all together, you get a story. This happened in Mirage. And it's changed a bit since then. Some of us writers have really taken a view on it. from art and storyline being two different pieces to extended universe things, looking at the game as a brand, as a 20,000 foot out, and what does that mean, including cosplay, but also even what Ant worked on with his creation of a plane.
Right. And I mean, honestly, I think now Vorthos is, the way that I try to think about it is that, you know, there are two, it's like two sides of the same coin. Like the Melvin group are the guys who worry about the game and the mechanics and everything that it means to be actually playing Magic, right?
And women. Melvin sucks, though. So.
Yeah, or Melvina, right? I actually tried to push that a little bit. Like, I feel like the naming needs to be more gender, non-gender specific.
Yeah, I've heard that. The Vorthothena or the Melvin or somehow has a male-female version. But then you have that other, well, you should have a non-conforming name, like Pat. Or, you know, you don't have to have 15 versions. You can just have one thing and then make it into a hashtag and you're good to go. And I think the psychographics struggle with that, too. For other people knowing this, there is actually a new Vorthos article being written in the making. Mark Rosewater has mentioned this multiple times, that what it has become and what it would originally intention now differs. Krites, other things have priority, obviously. But we will keep defining that as we go. Snack Time with Mike and Ann is a reference to Snack Time with Vorthos, a column written by Matt Cavada, a Magic artist, and he's now a marketing art director.
Yeah, he used to write... So way back, he wrote Taste the Magic, which was a weekly column on the Mothership where he talked all about flavor goodies and Vorthos-type content. And in his article that was titled Snack Time with Vorthos, that was the first article where he kind of introduced this idea of the Vorthos psychographic, where it's people who aren't necessarily concerned with the different mechanical parts of the card or the game. They just come for like that good feeling of fantasy and like the flavor and the great art. And, you know, maybe it's somebody who collects Magic cards not because they want to play the game, but because they're just so enamored by all these different artists and just like the visual worlds that are kind of like created by the creative team. And so like Mike was saying, our name is a callback to that kind of like first introduction to what a Vorthos actually is.
Right, and they've struggled since that point to really define this, because there are only three psychographics. There's Johnny, Timmy, Spike, but that's almost seen as an XY axis, if you know the maths, and Melvin and Vorthos are aspects of each, and they're almost a Z axis that says, well, how much more are you into the rules, or are you much more into what it feels like to crack open a Shivan dragon and you want to have things that work together with other dragons as your deck? And even a Spike has this too, where their ultra competitive saying, I want to know everything that happened in Kamigawa. They're hilarious because they're so passionate about it compared to others who hate it so much.
Right. They would be the equivalent of like someone who was so into Star Trek that they wanted to know every detail of the ship and like, you know, what each room was and all like that. That's kind of like the Spike mentality.
People that want to find the style guides, which every commissioned artwork has a style guide to work from, and that's not open to the public. If you work on flavor text naming or writing of card names, you get a style guide, which is pretty great. And those people want to know everything about it. Why did they change the look of the goblins when we went back to Mirror? It happened there. Why is it different? And so on. And they have a lot of these analogous things. They just want to know the background motivation, which may or may not exist in many cases. So today, we can get into Commander 2014, and we figured the best way to start it off is everyone's seen spoilers, everyone knows what's coming, and we want to talk about an artwork that we see as very flavorfully fitting.
Well, actually, right before you start, I just want to make it clear, one of the things that Mike and I wanted to do is kind of like a tie-in every episode, similar to how if you listen to Limited Resources, he does a crack-a-pack, or on Marshall's Constructed Resources now, he does this thing where it's called Pick 7, and has an opening hand of a competitive deck, and talks about whether or not they would keep that hand, basically something that ties every episode together. So something that Mike came up with was this idea of flavor gems. And what we were going to do is at the beginning of each episode, Mike would just pick one card art that he really felt was unique or interesting. It would be kind of like his gem to talk about for that episode. And then I was going to pick one card that I felt had excellent name or flavor text or some kind of like literary gem, if you will. So we were going to kind of use that as our flavor gems. And then each episode we would talk about those cards.
Right. So, say we're talking about a vintage Masters thing online, we'll talk about some vintage cards, maybe with alternate art. So I'm going to pick a card, and me being a ever fan of green, I look through everything, but I look for references. I look for finding the Easter eggs in art. Demia, Steve Argyle's Amanda is one of the best ones, because there is littered with them of artifacts behind her. And for Commander 2014, my favorite is Wave of Vitriol. And the reason why I like this so much is it harkens back to not only some really cool Wrath effects, because the sacrifice is fantastic, but visually, it is trying to sneak in this nod and wink to Yokelhaus from Ice Age. Not the 5th edition one by Mike Kerr, which I love, and I'd love to buy the originals. Alas, he's totally sold out of all of his art, which is great. But the Ice Age version by Richard Thomas was made in nothing to be preserved. It was colored pencils and markers, and this Wave of Vitriol references that. And we don't get this very often anymore, where you have one card referencing another using modern media, Photoshop, or in Boros' case, it's traditionally painted, but it's in a new updated version of what the game would look like. If this was made, if that card was made now, this is probably what it would be. And I totally love that. Steve Belladin does this too. So I'm calling that as my favorite piece, and this card, not only that, it will be something that will be seen a lot.
Because it's awesome. Cards like these are, so in Ethan Fleischer's kind of like kickoff article talking about his design of Commander 2014, he mentioned that he was really going for a Time Spiral-esque vibe. And these, Time Spiral is littered with these kind of visual callbacks and visual references. And I was so happy to see that the creative team took a similar route on a lot of these cards, where if you sit Yokelhaus and Wave of Vitriol side by side, like the glaciers in Yokelhaus and the buildings in Wave of Vitriol, like the angles are the same, the wave of water coming out of one and the wave of, I don't know what that is, slime or acid or whatever, like they mirror each other so well. And even mechanically, like the cards are very similar.
Right, whereas Time Spiral often had two pieces tied into it, and people didn't understand a lot of those. Too much nostalgia, and if you were new to the game, it was, I don't understand why the hell Groundbreaker is the same as Ball Lightning. I don't get it. This is a more subtle, like if you miss the reference, you could still find the card enjoyable and it makes sense and all of those things. And I love that they finally figured out a way to get this nostalgia back into the game without it hitting you over the head with it, because then it just becomes tropey and terrible. So kudos to that. This is absolutely an art description where they sat down and said, okay, we have an ability. How do we get the art to reference that? Okay, well, we're going to put that in there, because this doesn't happen by accident. This is absolutely an art description. It's a very conscious effort by the creative team to say, we're going to give you some presence for being playing the game for so long. And then new players can say, oh, this references other things. Oh, I've never heard of that card. And then they get to integrate those into their commander decks. And which one did you grab?
All right. So for me, I really wanted to talk about Comeuppance, which is a white instant. Being a name, like a name in Flavortext writer, I understand there's a limited number of one word names that you could use for a card. And Doug Beyer has talked about this until he's blue in the face, that he absolutely hates the fact that there are so many old cards that used perfect one word names and they just suck. Yeah, like teleport, like it's absurd. Like they just were not thinking this game's gonna run for 20 plus years. We need to really conserve our good, you know, names. But anyway, comeuppance actually, so the definition of that word is a punishment or fate that someone deserves. And the mechanics of the card are so perfect for that word, because it's literally like one of the coolest white combat tricks. It's not even really a combat trick. It's just a straight out like counter whatever cool thing you were about to do card. But basically the way that it plays is, if you're playing Commander and your opponent or opponents decide that they're going to gang up on you for a turn, you just throw that out onto the stack and basically say, you know, you deserved it. Like, you picked on me, and now I'm just going to punch you in the face, and it's your fault, not mine.
Yeah, basically no easy buckets.
right, exactly. I want to see this altered with Dikembe Mutombo, like, when he stuffs somebody and he's like, not in my house.
So, I totally feel you. And it's actually one of the newer artists with Marco Nilar, and he has not been to that many events yet, so I don't think he's well known by people. So he's an up and coming guy. His Instagram feed where he puts his ink line works are really fantastic, and I think the more he goes to events, people are going to be requesting him to alter his stuff more because of artworks like this.
The one, honestly, and this is kind of like an aside, but the one thing that I felt that I wish that they would have done more in this set was more flavor text that kind of called back to the older cards or the cards that they were trying to reference. Because like Time Spiral, if you just read the flavor text, the referencing in all of those were, in some ways, like you said, they were kind of over the top and that you really had to know what was going on in order to get it. But I feel like that's the one place where they kind of held back too much in this set.
Well, I mean, I think some of the design of the cards really prohibited it, as so many of these had. Choose an opponent. It's like, well, yeah, that's just cool and great and fantastic for Commander, but it really limits any sort of flavorful offering.
Yeah.
At least so, and it's not like they can make text tiny anymore like they used to, but it would have been great to have a little tie-in. And I thought, as soon as I saw the Planeswalker spoiled, and I saw this Teferi can be your commander, I thought, oh, biscuits. I thought that was going to be a line of flavor. I thought they were going to make a little bit of room that you could have some sort of quip that represents them and their color, and it would be really clean. And they didn't. And I thought, oh, well, that's interesting to me. All these people may not know who Frailes is, and obviously no one knows who Duretti is.
Right. Exactly. But you bring up an interesting point, though, because, you know, originally the Planeswalker frame could fit three lines, right? So then Jace the Mind Sculptor, or the Face Destroyer, or whatever you want to call him, with him, they figured out, like, okay, four lines on a Planeswalker works. Like, it shrinks the art, but it still fits, right? And with these Planeswalkers, we can see, okay, now we have Planeswalkers that have three abilities, and they just have a line of text. But what I see here is that in the future, it's totally doable now, where you can have three abilities and then a line of flavor text. And like one of the things that Matt Cavada has said that he doesn't like about the Planeswalker frame is that originally there was no room for that text. And like they are supposed to be these like all-stars of the game, you know, like figureheads of the story. And you can't put any words in their mouth because there wasn't any space. But now with these frames, I feel like there is space. So there could be potential in the future to kind of have like a little one-liner that really paints for you kind of like the picture of like who that character is.
Well, I think that brings up an interesting question that we're seeing in this set of, okay, well, we're getting fan service with Stitcher Garouf, who colored these out. Like, we're seeing this, we requested these and we wanted these, they're listening. But at the same time, there's no storyline much anymore. There's no books. There's no ebooks. Comics are slowing to stop. And we're getting this. We need to understand what's next, what's going on. And with more sets, we don't really know how to reference future things other than getting spoilers. You can't put in a card, Teferi is here to see blank thing because an Eldrazi is coming. Because as soon as you put that in there, 2 years down the road, it's like, well, that's stupid. We all know that. We had an entire set about it. But there is a way that you could somehow reference some of those things, maybe with a token, maybe with some sort of promotional material that they're added with the packs that can give us this, here's the Planeswalker, oh, here's a little bit of flavor that he has that you get in the packs that can be very, very different, that can allow you to get that insight into who they are. Because otherwise, if you're new to the game, you have no idea who the hell Teferi is. And you really can't rely on the website to do that, because no one's going to be immediately citing or linking to, oh, this was this guy, he was part of Mirage, this is why we had Time Spiral, kind of a big deal. All of those other things, it just takes too much time in the grand scheme of things.
So, like, especially in, like, the Weatherlight saga, and, you know, that whole kind of setup of the majority of the cards were trying to tell the story to the point where you were kind of beaten over the head with it. And now when you go back to those cards, it's like every single card art had Gerard in it or somebody, right? And it was just kind of ridiculous. But now if you go look at, you know, Journey in the Nyx, the majority of the cards are just kind of playing up the Greek theme, and we have Minotaurs, and we have Cyclopses and what have you. But then you get to Deicide, or Deicide, I'm not exactly sure how you pronounce that, but all right, so Deicide, right? And it's all one package. Like, the mechanics of the card clearly are making it seem like I'm totally killing a god and wiping it off the face of the plane, you have the key character in the story, like, plunging her sword into a god's chest. Like, it's just the whole card paints a perfect picture of, hey, this is how our story ended. And it doesn't take up one third of the whole set. It doesn't take up a majority of the art to the point where when people go back to that set, they're like, oh man, we were kind of beat over the head with this story. It's just, you'll go back to that one card and you're like, oh yeah, I remember this. Elspeth went up into Nyx and just beat the living hell out of Xenagos, and it was awesome.
But at the same time, I mean, when you're in the time and you hear about this thing, oh, it's a Flamewalker coming up, he's ascended to godhood, and then you see a card spoiled and you're like, oh, okay, storyline over. You know, you have to have a secondary thing where all of a sudden Elspeth dies, you hear about it. But instead, it's this giant setup for this battle or something of the sort, and boom, it's over. Over. The same thing happened in New Phyrexia, where people wondered, oh, well, did any Mirans live? What happened after the New Phyrexian War? Did they take over the plane? And they made a card, War Report. And it's a white card, cost 4, it's an instant, you gain life, number of creatures. But in it, it's just it's in the flavor text, it says, yes, my lord, overwhelmingly, at the end of the war, meaning they got wiped out entirely. And those sort of encompassing cards, I think, are fun to do. But for anyone that's invested in a storyline or wants to know what's going on, as soon as that's revealed, all of the storyline has to be built up before then. Otherwise, it's, oh, well, okay, I know what happened, I know what resolved. I don't really care.
That's one of the cons of, you know, it's a trading card game. So, like, how do you tell a story where your player base might open the ending in their very first pack, right? So I think what they do a good job of is the cards that they pick. So, like, War Report and Deicide, like they pick these key moments where you're like, holy shit, how did that happen? And so it makes you want to go back to the other cards and try to piece together exactly how you got from Mirrodin to all of a sudden, like, the Phyrexians took over everything. Or last set, I opened up, you know, Xenagod, and now all of a sudden he's dead. Like, how did that happen? Like, it kind of draws you in and makes you want to know the in-between of the story.
And I feel like that could be even done outside of sets. And that's where it brings us back to Commander here. What's going on in the other planes? I actually want to know, because we don't have enough content anymore. Uncharted Realms gets one thing a week, and it should be current stuff. Our Arcana stuff should be current stuff. And instead, we get a couple little glimpses into the planes going on. Best example I saw was Gravesifter. You saw a sort of elemental beast situation on Innistrad. What's he doing? I don't know, but I want to know. Does this mean that now everything's okay on Innistrad? Did Avacyn really restore balance? Or is there end of Lord of the Rings where they have to round up the orcs and kill all the remainders? Or is there another conflict that allows us to return?
And it's the flavor text on that one is very interesting, because it's saying that, you know, it's clawing at the earth in a vain attempt to reclaim what it once was. So that kind of makes me think, you know, are these creatures that now that Avacyn came through and she did her world purifying spell, like, are there things that are left over that kind of like have no purpose? And so they're just trying to get back to what they used to be before, like, the plane went to hell and everybody was getting eaten alive by vampires and werewolves. And it's just nice to get those little windows into, like, it makes it feel like these worlds are alive, that they're still evolving even though the spotlight isn't on them.
Right, and I think that's this idea of the supplemental products, is to give just a glimpse into what's going on in other planes. But I feel like it's so focused on figures that we don't get to see what's actually happening visually. And that's the one gripe about I have about this set, is to say, I would have loved to have alternate art lands, new land that we get to see whatever's tied to that planeswalk. For example, Obnixilus. Maybe we have a Zendikar landscape, which we get to see what's going on. Or Doretti gives us some view of his plane. I mean, these things can happen, and it's really probably a budgetary question to say, do they have extra money left over from the set to make commission new art? But I'm really curious to see what's going on those planes while we're coming in and out, because really, supplemental products are the only way we get to see those.
Right. So what... Speaking of Doretti, how do you feel about him as a planeswalker?
I think Doretti is a necessity to do. While I would have loved Slobad to get his minute in the sun, and I understand Mark Rosewater's belief that you need to have someone that you can make multiple times, not just a one of. At the same time, I'm seeing this completionist aspect of Jezahl Goldmane having a card. Well, he's dead too. Why is he there? of these other characters that are just all trying to get eventually into the game. We're probably not going to see an Urza character come in here because you can't reprint it, but people demand that. People want to see what's happened to their old favorites. And since Duretti is so close to Slowbad's abilities, I mean, so close.
Yeah, he is Slowbad. Like, it's almost identical.
Probably Slowbad did it for his entire 15 seconds, but I understand why they had to do that, and I know they wanted to make a Goblin Planeswalker and all that good stuff, but it just seems like he could have had a greater role than maybe he was supposed to be in Conspiracy, and they just couldn't fit him in. That's behind the scenes me looking at it from a creative perspective to say they probably just couldn't fit him in. And they just had to cut somewhere, and he was the one to go.
So I know that, you know, Mark Rosaro, he also commented on the fact that, like, for those of you who don't know, Slowbod obtained his spark accidentally from Glissa, and then subsequently...
The first Mirrodin storyline.
Right, and then gave it up almost immediately in order to restore life to a lot of Mirrodins that were kind of killed or destroyed by, I believe, Memnarch at the time. So while Slowbod was a planeswalker, he was a planeswalker for probably upwards of 15 minutes. Like, it was not a very long amount of time. And I think part of the flavor in a planeswalker card is that you're kind of summoning an ally. You're summoning another planeswalker to your side to help you in battle. And while all these other cards make sense as, like, callbacks, you could be summoning, you know, a past representation of Fraelis or Obnixilis. For you to be able to summon Slowbod to fight with you doesn't make a lot of flavor sense due to the fact that he was only a planeswalker for 15 minutes. Like, where in those 15 minutes did he have time to zip around the multiverse and help out a whole bunch of people? Like, it just kind of doesn't line up very well. So I can understand why they wouldn't want to use him. But what I think is that they looked at that character, right? They looked at Slowbad, and like, Slowbad was an incredibly unique character and an incredibly unique take on a goblin. And I appreciate the fact that they knew that that would play well and that that would be recognized. And so they just kind of came up with, it's like a revamped new age version of Slowbad.
Functional reprint, if you will.
Exactly.
It's exactly what it is, a functional reprint.
And what's great about Duretti is that they can evolve him through the story, right? Like, he's alive now. So if they want to go back to Conspiracy again and they want to show how he's evolved as a character, like, they can do that. Whereas Slowbod offered zero ability to do that.
I understand that. He can evolve over time, sure. But then you look at why is Obnixilis even as a planeswalker? He lost his spark, remember?
Right, but this is supposed to be before that happened.
But that, you can make that argument. People are dead anyway. What the hell does it matter? It's like, well, yeah, I guess that's fair, but he can keep having a story. Giselle Goldbane is the best example of, well, he's dead, he's gone. Why the hell are we even showing this? I can see the balancing act and it being a planeswalker having a better ongoing story than a one-off legendary creature. I get that. That makes sense to me. But I think it's a good example of, they probably had a meeting about this and they probably yelled about it. They had the people fighting back and forth saying, ah, that doesn't make sense. Creative can't make any new storylines. And the other person saying, listen, if we don't do it now, we're never going to do it. And I'm still unsure what to think about it, but I'm at least happy that people are so excited and passionate about discussing it.
Absolutely. And another thing that I really, really want to see on, like, a good note is I want to see what he is sitting in. Like, I want to see the full art of this card so badly. I mean, he has no legs. He blew his legs off in true goblin artificer style. He has no legs. And so he's created this contraption to kind of, like, ride around in, which is pretty awesome.
We'll see soon. Let's say as our final note today, we'll ask Dan Scott. And we'll see when we can get this full art posted as quick as you can. Well, we're at time, which is okay. Happy to do this with you, Ant. We'll discuss and get some feedback and dial down more in the future.
So, Mike, if listeners want to get in touch with you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Sure. The best way is to grab one of my articles on Gathering Magic, write in the comments, and even faster than that is to tweet at me. And I'm at OrthosMike, which is VORTHOS Mike. On the Twitters. We'll post it in the bottom here, and I will respond whatever you have more questions about things or want to know about things, and I'm always available.
Best way to get a hold of me is probably on Twitter. I am at AntMTG, and also if you know, check out any of my articles on Gathering Magic and leave a comment, send an email. My email is usually in all of my articles, so I read everything that anyone ever sends me, mostly because I'm just a huge flavor dork and I love magic so much. So feel free to send me whatever you want.
Awesome. Well, for both of us, thank you much, and we'll let you know when the next episode is soon.